Chapter 5. Proximity. Summary. Previously on Epistaxis Anime. I have one more secret, Matt.
What?
I like someone. I know. Or, Matt thinks Foggy just confessed to liking Marcy. Matt searches for a cure. Matt awoke with a start. There was an ache in his throat to accompany his mouth's foul taste, and a tangled ball of nausea made its nest near his clavicle. He groaned, a shell of a groan, really, with how hoarse he was, and rolled over as far as he could before he hit something solid. Foggy. Matt stilled. He'd never made it back to his bed, even after Foggy had roundly rejected any possibility between them. They just kind of moved past it, rearranging themselves so they overlapped in less places, and settling into pre-sleep nonsense talk. Crossing the room hadn't seemed worth it after that. Not that Matt had had much say over his body's sleepy designs, anyway. Or any of its designs in general, which was what had cost him his crush's attention while he'd still had the chance. Place him on an even playing field with Marcy, though? And maybe he could have walked, still could walk, away with the prize. But thoughts like that would only lead to madness, so he turned his attention to other things. Foggy's heart beat steadily beside him, and Matt focused on it for a few seconds, until the illegal hamster their neighbor was keeping next door went at its water bottle again and broke his newly formed concentration. He mused on the life of a pet hamster as he listened to it scurry about in its wood shavings. But it wasn't long before it nestled into a corner and fell asleep. Without it to distract him, his senses wandered down the hall to a toilet flush, in closer to two people having hushed sex early in the morning, and then returned at last, inevitably, to where they had started with Foggy. His mind soon followed, and he was thinking back again to the previous night, back to whispers of touches, shoulders brushing together, to warmth seeping into Matt from Foggy's soft belly and their hands connected. For a brief spell, Matt had been so close to all he craved. He'd been Icarus, and the sun hadn't been able to reach his wings. He'd been free of the fetters of his illness, free at last to indulge in the sin of proximity without sanction. If there was a way to extend that liberty, even temporarily, he had to find it. So, Matt dipped a toe into the pool of madness, and in its ripples he read a want for knowledge. He couldn't believe it had never occurred to him to look at research on Epistaxis Anime during undergrad. He knew the basics, of course, from the doctor's red-faced explanation when he was first diagnosed, and a session of cursory Googling after, but the disease wasn't particularly well understood. With its rarity, building up a body of research with reproducible results had to be nigh impossible, so it made sense that any one-off papers about it would stay confined to the realm of scientific journals and paywalls. Only now, with Columbia's library at his back, could Matt expect to find any real information. His skim buzzed with the need to discover as much as he could, starting with its connection to alcohol. But first, he had to get past Foggy and to his laptop without waking him up. Matt took stock of his situation in order to plan his escape. He was stuck between Foggy and the wall, and it was either travel the length of the bed or step gingerly over Foggy and off the other side. Both options were less than ideal and would surely rock the mattress, but Matt was reasonably confident that if he tensed his muscles just right, he could clear Foggy with one acrobatic twist, as opposed to the three or four scoots of his butt the long way down would require. Careful not to disturb Foggy with his movements, he propped himself up, pointed his toes, and vaulted over his roommate's sleeping form to land cat-like on the floor beside the bed, then silently padded over to his desk and laptop. He booted up his computer and navigated to the library portal website. Anxiety about whether he'd turn up anything useful layering itself atop his hangover, so that he was doubly queasy. When his screen reader told him he'd located the search bar, he typed in epistaxis anime alcohol, figuring he'd get that question out of the way before tackling medical specifics above his pay grade. His search returned two articles, one published in the American Journal of Medicine titled "The Hematological Benefits of Alcohol Consumption by Patients with Epistaxis Anime," and the other from the Journal of Law, Medicine, and Ethics titled "Unorthodox Medical Treatments and Medical Malpractice Law, an Overview." Matt clicked on the one that mentioned alcohol explicitly, expecting that, since it had also appeared in a medical journal, its findings might hold more value to him. He downloaded the PDF from the link and opened it up, only for his screen reader to return an error. The PDF was in an inaccessible format. If he wanted to know what was in it, he'd have to ask one of the student volunteers at the school's disability center to record themselves reading it, because he certainly wasn't going to ask Foggy for help on this matter. Frustrated, Matt clenched his fist over his keyboard. This was far from the first time he'd run into this problem, but he wasn't usually so concerned with keeping his research close to the vest, and so, however begrudgingly, thus far he'd managed to get by on workarounds. He pulled in a breath and ran a finger across the smooth edge of his laptop screen to ground himself. Then, pinning all his hopes on the academic world's glacial crawl towards accessibility, he clicked on the second PDF. When that, too, came back with an error, Matt threw his hands up to grasp at his hair in lieu of swearing out loud. He slumped back into his chair and let gravity draw him far down into his seat, only stopping his descent when his chin hit his chest and he could feel the skin on his neck bunching up beneath it unpleasantly. His search couldn't end like this. There had to be another way to access the information inside the articles without giving himself away entirely. He chewed his lip, thinking. There was a small chance he could find a common source between the two articles from among the cited works listed on the download page. He could start there. This wasn't over yet. Once he'd both fixed his posture and adjusted the speed of his screen reader to make it easier to catch details, Matt began combing through the citations. He made it through those of the malpractice article without a single instance of alcohol or epistaxis anime in any of the titles and felt his anxiety climb. The possibility that all of this was futile, and he would have to out himself to the disability office after all, loomed over him once again. He imagined bringing Mrs. Cranston, the kindly woman who usually processed his request, one of those orange scones she liked, and swearing her to secrecy. But while that might not be the worst scenario, he'd rather avoid it altogether. He had his device read out the citations from the second article, the phantom smell of orange zest and confectioner's sugar swirling around him ever stronger as he descended into the alphabet. But his hallucinations were unfounded. Shortly after the halfway mark, he identified a match. Peretti and Collins, volume 456 of the Northeastern Reporter Second, page 608, New York, 1984. A court case. Matt was, frankly, surprised to find a legal reference in the bibliography of medical journal at all, let alone for it to be the thing he was looking for. But he wasn't about to look a gift horse in the mouth. He opened up Westlaw and plugged in the case name, then eagerly set in to reading. Peretti and Collins, unsurprisingly, was a medical malpractice case. Linda Peretti, the plaintiff, was a woman suffering from epistaxis anime. She'd brought the lawsuit against her doctor, whose unorthodox medical advice, she claimed, had led to her divorce from her husband. As Matt read the summary of the case, he was reminded of the soap operas his grandma used to chain smoke to on her beaten-up couch. It was certainly as outlandish. Peretti had gone to Dr. Collins, considered one of the few experts on the disease, as he'd published the seminal study identifying the link between patients' nosebleeds and their sex drives, for a consultation after she began to have nosebleeds around a coworker. She had brought with her the observation that her symptoms seemed to lessen whenever she was drunk, wondering whether there was some way to extend the effect short of becoming an alcoholic. According to her, however, the doctor had urged her not to explore that line of query, instead insisting that he knew how to cure her altogether. presented in evidence was a prescription slip that read, "Have sex." Peretti was reportedly bemused but did what the doctor had told her. Only, much to her husband's displeasure, she'd had sexual intercourse with her coworker and not him, and he filed for divorce soon after. Dr. Collins, whose defense strategy seemed to mostly revolve around the efficacy rather than the ethics of his medical counsel, lost on the grounds of inappropriateness of his conduct for someone in his position. Matt took out his earbuds in disbelief. He didn't know what to think, but luckily, rendering judgment wasn't necessary for him to apply the information he had gained to his dilemma. There was a cure, and it didn't even require a long stay in the hospital or squandering his life savings. All he had to do to be able to face Foggy, to stop inconveniencing him with his nosebleeds at least while he pined for him, was find somebody willing to help him lose his virginity. Easy enough, he thought, noting that the couple from earlier were just wrapping things up. There was bound to be someone he could convince, maybe even from his own dorm building if he were lucky. It was a couple days later, and Matt hadn't been able to devote much time to his predicament. The reprieve from his studies that finishing up midterms was supposed to have granted him turned out to equate to roughly the same amount of time he and Foggy had spent considering the logistics of dating anthropomorphic turtles, which is to say that he'd used it all up in a single night and now was facing down several heavy-duty projects. Between tracking down obscure case law to use in his arguments, keeping up with his regular weekly readings, and trying to time things so that he made it to the dining hall before closing every night, thinking about anything much other than school had been out of the question. Until, that is, Foggy unknowingly solved his problem for him. The two of them tracked Mud into the dorm building's entrance hall as they came back with smuggled Tupperware under their arms to dine on later in the privacy of their room. Their conversation on pause momentarily, they slipped past Todd and his date outside his door before the RA could roll his eyes at them for necessitating the wet floor sign yet again. Not that he was the type of guy to scold anyone, but serial umbrella forgetter wasn't the kind of reputation either of them aspired to. For it to be true, anyway, they would have had to have owned umbrellas at all. Matt had left his somewhere on campus at the beginning of the semester, and Foggy reportedly lived for the thrill of it. They giggled like unseasoned thieves as they made it back to their room unseen and shrugged off their sopping jackets. Matt prepped himself mentally for the stench of wet socks and soggy shoes that awaited them in the morning as he dried off his feet with a ratty hand towel. He expected Foggy's comment to address the upcoming stink, or at least be something along those lines, but it threw him for a loop instead. "What do you think his secret is?" Foggy said, draping his socks over the back of his desk chair, and then wheeling it as close to the radiator as he could without risking fire. Under the pretext of walking his own socks over, Matt pulled the chair back a fraction of an inch. It could simply have been paranoia, but he could have sworn he'd heard some faint sizzling. "What? Who?" he asked when that was done. "Todd. He pulls at least once a week." "Pulls?" Matt questioned, not knowing why he felt the need to play dumb. It was fairly common knowledge that Todd had at least two hobbies, and of them, it wasn't the video games that made him unreliable in times of crisis. It'd been just the previous week that a particularly loud moan had had Matt turning on his heel, cheeks stained red, and abandoning another request to visit the supply closet. "You know exactly what I mean," Foggy said, as he popped the lid off his Tupperware container, and the much more appealing scent of barbecued chicken and mashed potatoes filled the room. Matt sat at his desk and followed suit, pulling a fork from his top drawer which homed, among other more study-related things, the single set of silverware he owned. "Okay, you're right," he said and shrugged. "Charisma, probably. Or one of those apps. Pounder or whatever." From the sound of it, a piece of chicken got vacuum-sucked straight into Foggy's throat and he choked. "Grinder, Matt. It's Grinder," he gasped. "Yeah, that," Matt returned nonchalantly. Anyway, Foggy emphasized, patting his mouth with a napkin, I'm not sure I buy your charisma theory, unless clinical levels of apathy are some sort of bonus. Matt supposed they might not be, and mumbled as such, but meanwhile, Foggy's words had set off a chain of dominoes in his head. He remembered how laid back Todd had been on move-in day when he and Foggy had greeted him with the grisly sight of his first nosebleed. If, totally unprepared, the blood hadn't fazed him, he might be Matt's best bet as far as finding someone both willing to have sex with him and unlikely to abort mission the second Matt's nose pulled its signature stunt. You never know. They might be to somebody, Matt shrugged, even as he psychically thanked Foggy for making it so that he no longer had to run through his mental roster of acquaintances in search of a viable candidate. Now all he had to do was figure out how to ask Todd. Matt lay awake later that night, wondering how normal people asked each other if they wanted to hook up. He would have thought all the conversations he'd accidentally been privy to might have taught him something useful in this department, but for some reason his brain insisted on providing him with scenarios straight out of the 70s porn video playbook. He imagined intercepting the pizza delivery guy next time Todd ordered in, and showing up at his door with awful lines such as, I heard you ordered some sausage. Rolling over as much to reset himself mentally as physically, he wiped the thought from his mind in order to start brainstorming anew. But before he could figure out anything definitive, sleep claimed him. Matt was straining himself, trying to squeeze the last remnants of toothpaste from the tube, when his opportunity slammed open one of the shower doors behind him. He forced out a too big blob in surprise as none other than Todd stepped out of the stall, his flip-flops smacking down against the bathroom floor like an omen. Matt gripped the sides of the sink, released them, then turned around with what he hoped was a pleasant smile on his face. Absence of a plan be damned. It was now or never, probably. Todd spoke first, supplying Matt with an easy entry into the conversation, one that didn't require him to explain how he knew who it was he'd run into in the third floor bathroom. Hey, Matt, remind Foggy to RSVP on movie night, would you? Sure, no problem. Matt paused awkwardly, searching for something to say, and landing on the most obvious but least pressing question. What brings you to these parts? The bottles in Todd's shower caddy knocked together as he lifted it up to sit in the crook of his arm. Maintenance in the downstairs bathrooms today, he explained. There was an email about it a while ago. Now that Todd mentioned it, Matt did have a dim memory of the notice, and if he probed with his senses downward, he could make out some metal clanking. Right. One of Todd's flip-flops squeaked against the floor, signaling his imminent exit as he turned toward the door. Matt's window was closing. He pushed past his nerves and blurted out, Hey, you wouldn't want to... Unable to finish the sentence, he flushed in embarrassment. Following a beat of silence, during which Matt felt very much like he was being given a once-over, Todd said, Are you asking me out? Matt leaned on the sink for support as he floundered for a response that would convey the situation properly while keeping its key details under wraps. Not out-out, he started, and he was already horrified by where his mouth was taking him, although it didn't end up taking him much further. Just if you wanted to. Hook up? Todd finished for him, with absolutely none of the weight Matt felt balling up in his stomach. Yeah, Matt said sheepishly. He ran a hand through the back of his hair. Sure. Does in a half hour work? I've kind of got a tight schedule. Not trusting himself to speak again, Matt nodded enthusiastically, although in the back of his mind, he questioned both Todd's willingness to get laid at 10:30 a.m. on a Saturday and his own to go along with it. Cool, just knock on my door, Todd said, and then walked out of the bathroom, slapping the top of the doorframe with a hand as he went. Matt turned back to his toothbrush and set resolutely to brushing his teeth. Only a few minutes ago, this wouldn't have been much more than part of his morning routine. Now, however, he wasn't brushing so that his mouth would be fresh, so much as so that his mouth would be fresh before his appointment with Todd. The reality of the situation was finally starting to set in. He couldn't help but feel like he was about to make some sort of mistake, like he'd misread the part of the Peretti and Collins court transcript where the plaintiff admitted to her nosebleeds having stopped after sex, or like he'd dreamed up the case entirely. He spat into the sink and tried to convince himself again that he was about to do a good thing. He was taking steps to cure himself and maybe earn his right to throw his hat in the ring as one of Foggy's suitors. Everything would work out fine. All he had to do was get through what would probably be Todd's worst hookup experience, and then it'd all be smooth sailing from there. A half hour later, after walking into and back out of his room, when he couldn't figure out a response to Foggy's, "You all right? You look like you've, felt a ghost," and subsequently pacing the halls, Matt gathered the courage to knock on Todd's door. "Yo," Todd said, as he stood aside to let Matt in. Matt moved past him and into the room, its air thick with stale incense. It was bigger than his and Foggy's, despite being a single. He could swing his cane in a wider radius before hitting anything, and there had been space for a couch, which Todd directed him toward. Matt sat down on it, his sudden weight triggering a puff of sour old sweat smell deeply embedded in the cushion, and he fought not to wrinkle his nose. Todd perched himself on the couch's arm on the other side. Without preamble, he said, "So what are you up for?" Matt jumped slightly, betraying his nerves. He hadn't gotten this far in his planning. After all, what even constituted sex in the eyes of his epistaxis anime? Would a simple orgasm suffice? Was it more complicated than that? "I've never really," Matt admitted, hoping Todd would take the lead because he was genuinely out of his depth here. "Really?" Todd sounded surprised, but then his tone shifted as though he'd done some mental calculations and arrived at a plausible explanation. "So you and your roommate aren't boning then," he noted. "And that's why you're here." "What, me and Foggy?" Matt choked. "What makes you think we'd be boning?" he asked, his immediate panic giving over to an intense curiosity. Was his crush that obvious? Did it look like, to an impartial observer, Foggy reciprocated? He burned with a thousand questions, but it was imperative to keep his cool if they were still going to hook up. "The way you hang all over each other, for starters," Todd shrugged. "He guides me, that's all," Matt frowned. Maybe Todd wasn't as observant as he'd thought. "So you don't like him?" Todd said skeptically. Matt weighed the consequences of telling the truth and decided he trusted Todd enough to let slip an "I do," which was quickly followed up by a "but he doesn't like me back." "You sure about that?" "He told me he likes someone else," Matt said, and suddenly he was less keen to continue the conversation. It wasn't like he needed reminders of the rejection. Todd hummed noncommittally. "Okay, well, I'm just saying. Every guy I've ever looked at, the way he looks at you, has ended up in this room where you are now." An acute sense of longing shot through Matt. He wanted to believe Todd, but he'd heard Foggy say the words himself, and his heart had beat nothing but truthfulness. If Foggy liked him back, it had to be on a subconscious level. But in any case, they were getting away from the task at hand. Luckily, Todd seemed to be of the same mind because he said, "Anyway, we can take things easy. How about I blow you first so you can get a feel for it? Then you can do me if you're still game." Matt nodded, saying, "Sure, yeah." He sat there for a moment as he tried to figure out what the logical next step was, then reached for the button on his pants. "Whoa there, cowboy." Todd came down off the couch arm and knelt beside Matt on the cushion as he took Matt's hand and laced his fingers through it. "It helps to set the mood first," he said. Picking up a remote with his other hand and setting it to play music through a nearby speaker. Right, Matt said weakly. He closed his eyes because that was what he'd heard people were supposed to do and waited for Todd's lips to hit his. The RA's trademark Pepsi breath rustled his eyelashes as his face came in closer to Matt's. Matt Lyme pushed his hand up and against the back of the sofa. He went along with being coaxed into a tentative first kiss, then gave the command to his lips to kiss back. Things sped up after that, and they worked up a rhythm. Before long, Todd's hands found their way into his shirt, and then he didn't have a shirt. He mimicked his hookup's moves one by one. If Todd ran his fingers down Matt's chest, grazing his nipple, Matt returned the favor, with a reasonable amount of lag. He had no idea what he was doing, but he was grateful for the crash course in making out he hadn't gotten in high school or undergrad like everyone else. He would need it once everything had gone according to plan. Once Foggy was safely his and he could think about sex with him that didn't require a biohazard suit. It was out of a sense of self-preservation that Matt was careful not to let his mind wander too far toward Foggy, although thoughts of him helped when Todd palmed him through his jeans. He almost sighed in relief when he realized he was hard. He tipped his head back as Todd unzipped him, the tickle he'd come to know so well foreshadowing what had always been the only possible outcome, but managed at least to wiggle the rest of the way out of his pants before the blood began its downward trickle. Todd. Matt patted him slightly on the shoulder to let him know he needed a break, much like someone tapping out at martial arts practice. Matt felt Todd's eyes appraise him. Let me grab tissues, he said, and soon returned with a box. Matt took one and wiped his nose with it. All things considered, the flow was nowhere near any of the nosebleeds he'd experienced around Foggy. Then again, Matt was pretty sure the universe had come up with Foggy specifically to torment him with an endless array of lustful thoughts. The world's most apathetic RA could hardly compare. Not that that was a bad thing, or that he'd expected him to. The sooner and less messily he could get this over with, the better. When it looked like Matt's nose wasn't about to recreate The Shining, they set the tissue box on the floor for easy access and picked things up where they'd left off. Matt leaned back into the sofa as Todd took him into his mouth. Getting a blowjob was an experience. Matt didn't know how most people didn't end up a crumpled mess. Some pressure here, and he gripped the top of the couch for support. A teasing look there, and his inner thigh muscles were shaking. It didn't take long, even as emotionally uninvested as he was, for Todd's ministrations to have their intended effect, and he came, together with a short burst of blood from his nose. Sorry, he apologized, as he bent down to grab another few tissues and apply them to his bloody nose. Todd, unflappable as ever, told him not to worry about it, only grabbing a tissue for himself to clean off his hand. Then, since Matt's nosebleed seemed to have been confined to the moment, he said, "You still down to give it a try?" Matt nodded and, after another quick round of kissing, settled down to business. While he tried, at first, to mirror Todd's technique, it soon became apparent that relying on his partner's tells was the better bet. He made his adjustments according to Todd's ragged breaths, the little jumps in his heartbeat, his sighs and shivers. Todd gave him verbal hints too, which Matt followed to the best of his ability, as he told him when to go slower or where to lavish his attention. Eventually his work paid off when Todd pulled out of Matt's mouth to catch his spunk in yet another tissue, finishing without any particular fanfare. They recovered their clothes and dressed in amicable silence, and afterward Todd led Matt to the door, where he left with a meek thank you and a promise to take Todd up on his offer to go again sometime, if things still hadn't worked out with Foggy. The door shut behind Matt, and he pulled his first breath as a nosebleed-free man. The air out in the hallway was, comparatively, fresh, and that combined with the fact that he hadn't bled a single drop during the blowjob he'd given Todd, only compounded the sense that he'd, at last, come out the other side. Matt felt good. He felt lighter. Never again would he be beholden to his fucked-up biology. He could fantasize freely, and more. He set off up the stairs, eager to get to his room and Foggy, and do what, he still didn't know. Marcy's name wormed its way into his head, but he dismissed it the way he might an intrusive thought. Now was not the time. Not when his triumph permeated the air like a loaf of freshly baked bread. He could worry about the fine details later, but for now all he wanted to do was bask unrepentantly in Foggy's glow. Impatient, Matt sent his senses off searching ahead of his feet. They came back early, bringing with them Foggy's rhythmic humming, the squeak of a shower handle, and percussion from the ensuing spray. Matt listened as Foggy's voice grew stronger to compete with the water pressure. What had been wordless to start, evolving into a passionate yet off-key karaoke session. La la la, la 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 la, Foggy belted, more than doing justice to the intro to Kylie Minogue's Can't Get You Out of My Head. Matt felt his face crease fondly and his heart swell. Foggy sure wouldn't be winning any auditions anytime soon, but he'd already secured Matt's affections 1,000 times over. Matt wondered if there was a limit to how much you could love someone, if he wouldn't just split like unevenly fired pottery one day at the thought of him. Matt walked toward their room unhurriedly, relying entirely on his cane to ensure the path in front of him was clear, while the rest of his attention danced along to Foggy singing. I just can't get you out of my head, went the line, and it rang true for Matt in the way that lyrics target the vulnerable. Boy, your lovin' is all I think about, Foggy sang next. And loving Foggy was all Matt was thinking about. He listened to the water patter on Foggy's skin in the shower, imagined droplets collecting here and there before tracing paths down his body. He thought about kissing Foggy. He thought about running his hands over Foggy where the water had gone before them. He thought about the noises he might draw out of Foggy, about hugging him fiercely, about playing with his hair, kissing him on the cheek, holding hands. His chest burned with it. But so did his nose. And so did his eyes, now brimming with angry, frustrated tears. None of what he'd just done had changed anything. His gambit had failed. He was still just as unqualified to love Foggy as he'd ever been. And his nosebleed wasn't waiting for him to catch up to that fact. Matt walked faster. Instead of passing the bathroom to get to his room like he'd planned, he made a detour in favor of its linoleum floor. He estimated he had only seconds before things got ugly. And he was right. It was as though all the blood that should have come out while he was with Todd abandoned its game of hide-and-seek as soon as he'd crossed the threshold. Matt choked down the excess blood as his nostrils strained under the burden of a powerful flow. He waffled by the sinks, debating whether to direct his vital fluids down the drain, before another of Foggy's la la la, la 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 refrain struck the fear of God in him. This close to the source, he might very well bleed out without some kind of intervention. To the stalls and a roll of toilet paper it was. Matt set his cane down against the wall to free up his hands, one to pinch his nose and the other to cup his chin to prevent what he could from splashing down. Predictably, it wasn't enough. Fuck, he muttered, as blood splatters echoed up at him during his trek to the other side of the bathroom, proving the point. Foggy's singing cut out, and so did the water. Matt, he called out. That you? You okay? Matt froze a few steps past Foggy's shower door. I'm fine, he lied, and it might have been convincing had the words not sounded as though they were coming from a drowning victim. Hemorrhaging from his nose wasn't exactly conducive to proper enunciation. And Foggy, versed in Matt's nosebleed as he was, took that as his cue. Hang on, buddy, he said, and, to Matt's horror, ripped back the shower curtain and grabbed his towel. Matt tried to stop him before he got all the way out of the shower, but his Foggy, you don't have to, died when the shower door swung open and his roommate stepped out, undeterred. Jesus, Matt, Foggy said, moving toward him. It took Matt a second to register that he hadn't heard the proper smack of Foggy's flip-flop back up into his heel that would have indicated a forward step. Instead, there was a wet scraping sound and a surprised squeak from Foggy as he careened backward, having slipped on Matt's trail of blood. Matt's instincts kicked in and he rushed to catch him. He propelled himself in Foggy's direction, but he soon realized his miscalculation. The same blood puddle that had taken down his friend had leaked its way underneath Matt's shoes, and he fell forward, his arms flung out in front of him. They both fell in a heap, Matt on top of Foggy. Sorry, Matt blurted, his face heating up as he realized, first, that his lips were mere inches from Foggy, and second, that he was bleeding all over him. He pulled back and pressed an arm to his nose. His shirt seemed a worthy sacrifice. Matt was about to double up on his apology when Foggy burst out laughing. "I'm sorry, I shouldn't be laughing, but you're on my tit," he said. Matt blinked. He found that he was, in fact, leaning on Foggy, his palm neatly centered over Foggy's nipple. Removing his hand, he tried to laugh along with him at the absurdity of the situation. Hadn't Foggy joked, back at their first meeting, about crime scenes? This time, Matt actually had a body count. It was funny, wasn't it? That the thing he'd wanted so badly, to be close to Foggy, had been brought about in this fashion, as if to make a mockery of his feelings and everything he'd tried and failed to accomplish with Todd. "Wait, are you crying?" Foggy propped himself up on his wrist to inspect what little of Matt's face wasn't obscured by his forearm or his glasses. At Foggy's question, a hot, plump tear dropped heavily from Matt's eye onto his cheek, and then his guard crumbled completely. "Aw, come here, it's okay," Foggy said, and held him. He held Matt until his sobs faded, and his blood platelets did their job, and it all felt a little less urgent. But Matt couldn't tell him the real reason why he needed him to, and that hurt worse than anything. End chapter 5.